You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Gary Leonard, and I am joined in the studio today with the editor of the Asheville Blade, David Forbes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And David, you and I, we do a segment that we like to call the City Council Report.
Yeah.
And we are here to report on the most recent City Council meeting, which took place on April 24th, 5 p.m., in the council chamber.
But it started, there was a bunch of sessions start before that.
And that's where we're going to start.
And that turned out to be super important, actually.
And that is what we like to call a segue, because we are going to start a little bit before I did the hand gesture. And so we're going to start a little bit before the actual meeting and talk about this budget session. And so before we dive into the details, the kind of nitty gritty of what took place here in this budget session, why was there a budget session, and how often do these budget sessions occur with city council members, just for the listeners out there?
So this year they're occurring a lot. There's usually at least a few of them. Budget sessions are basically sessions that take place outside the regular meeting. They don't usually involve as formal of an agenda or, you know, public hearings or anything. Actually, council has to do that during the regular meetings by law. But they do involve kind of an overall discussion of a policy. Staff will broach various things, or councilors will broach various things, kind of go back and forth. Where you see a lot of them is years like this, where there's some sort of budget gap or real challenge, or where there's any kind of wrangling to kind of go through. And the previous budget session, which Lee Cowart, who's a journalist The Blade works with sometimes, covered about 2 weeks ago, you saw a lot of real kind of, you know, how is he going to close his budget gap? And the city has a fairly considerable one, or had a fairly considerable one, of about $3 to $5.5 million. And basically this was driven by two main factors, which was right about 1.4 when you factor in some of the added expenses. Police expansion, very controversial issue last year. There's a plan to add more police downtown. But it's kind of based on what are some pretty shaky numbers, as some of the Blade's coverage last year kind of delved into and proved, and wasn't really done transparently, and has become even more controversial now with the really, you know, major shock to the city's political system about the level of police brutality, especially after the revelation of the videos, the attack on Johnny Rush.
And it's worth noting in terms of the council members that were here last year for the budget. There was a lot of community pushback. Were there any council members in particular who were opposed to the budget expansion?
To the police expansion?
The police expansion.
So at the last meeting, there was some real discussion, because of the members of council right now, two voted against it last time, Keith Young and Brian Haynes, and another, Shanika Smith, criticized it pretty heavily during the campaign, said it shouldn't be passed.
Right.
And, you know, during the campaign said, you know, even after it had passed, she was still running for office, said, look, you know, this needs to be rolled back. I think it's wrong. Basically, the critics are saying that under the APD's current culture, as shown by, you know, its traffic stop numbers, which have the worst racial disparities of any city in the state.
Period.
Yes, of any city in the state. And given, you know, issues like some of the previous instances you've seen over the years, and like the attack on Rush, that you start to see, you know, that without serious reforms, you don't need to be expanding the police department. You're just going to see more harassment of marginalized groups that already face a fair amount of harassment, and this will take place on, you know, minor or fabricated offenses, like, say, jaywalking, for example. So that argument's kind of gained more strength and a little more currency, again, heading into this next budget cycle because of some of these events that happened earlier in the year.
And I'll say, to quickly kind of jump in, something that I've heard a lot in the community, David, and please feel free to jump in, but maybe not the pushback of there's not a direct correlation of some of these incidents with the recent police expansion, but there's a culture piece to it in terms of this need to continue to, like, equip and continue to, like, dump in more resources into an institution that only really kind of continues to uphold what is the culture of really distrust that we've seen here in this community.
Yes. Well, and that's actually something I've heard from a lot of people too. I've heard basically, you know, and I mean, heck, I've seen this dynamic and comment on as a journalist sometimes too. You know, if crime numbers are going up, you know, Asheville will be portrayed as some sort of war zone. Even in some cases, police officials throw in some pretty awful stereotypes. And, you know, the only answer is more money, and it's not the time to question the police chief.
Yeah.
If crime rates go down, it's, our tactics are working. Unless you want things to turn into a war zone, don't question the police chief. Now's not the time. We need more money. So, you know, if one's around politics and...
let's turn to Chicago is what I remember hearing.
Yeah, actually, Chief Hooper literally said those words last time. Chicago and Detroit, I think, were the comparisons she used.
And those are some pretty inflamed comments.
But Hooper has doesn't really have a record of really pushing back any material degree against the APD's history of racism. Matter of fact, she's made it worse. Just to inform the listeners, and to be honest with full disclosure, I've written a column for The Blade titled Fire Hooper. I think she should have been gone a long time ago for this and a lot of other things, but especially when it comes to racial disparities. She's been a terrible police chief.
Yeah.
Of course, these two problems do go beyond her, much as she has definitely embodied them and worsened a lot of them.
I'm just going to say full disclosure, I didn't mean to derail you off of specifically
focusing
on... But
this context matters for going
into
this political fight. Please go on.
Well, coming back into the budget session in terms of what came up, you painted some context and some narrative in terms of the folks who have opposed previously the police expansion. Who ran on that and how that came up in the most recent budget session?
So the police expansion is definitely like one of the main factors here. The other is the fact that Asheville does pay raises for city staff across the board. And what this means, and this sounds like it makes a fair amount of sense or wouldn't be that controversial, 3% pay raise across the board for all city staff. But that includes people who make nearly $200,000 a year, and it includes people who are struggling to make ends meet, like your kind of rank-and-file firefighters, people like that. So with that giant range, if you just give a flat increase, if you're making one of these high salaries, you're the upper middle or the upper level staff, you're getting a fairly sizable bump. If you're, however, Parks and Rec worker, you're not going to really see that much. And that's been an issue, a source of tension a number of times over the years. And this year there was a proposal, and it is actually just to do kind of an across-the-board increase again. And throughout some of the previous budget sessions, there was discussion of, maybe, by some of the same people concerned about the police expansion, of, we freeze the increase or make it a much smaller one for the staff members, make them, say, 50, 60K, mm-hmm. but a much higher increase for the people making under 50, 60K. So kind of decided that, you boost us and the workers who might be really cash strapped, but if you're doing pretty well already, maybe it's not the time, so a budget crunch. And so I think there was a lot of expectation, including from me, and I unfortunately was not here for the council meeting that happened early this month. But seeing the video, seeing some discussions about this, I was like, okay, this can be a big issue. So one of the biggest things of the budget session was what didn't happen. None of that came up. Instead, the city is going to kind of square the budget up through increasing parking fees, which was kind of already on the table. They really kind of affirmed at this meeting. Specifically, right now, the first hour in any Asheville deck is free. No, if you stay there 7 hours or 1 hour or whatever, the first hour is always free. It's just not calculated in what you have to pay. Now, however, what they want to do this coming year is the first hour is only free if you're in and out in under an hour. Otherwise, you get charged the usual, $1.50 for the hour.
Mm-hmm. And they're expecting that's going to generate enough revenue to cover?
They expect it'll generate about $800,000 over the course of the year. That difference will, based on their stats of this. And again, the extra bucks doesn't sound like a lot, but we have a lot of people coming in and out of Asheville. And so you figure a lot of them aren't in and out with an hour. They're not just running an errand. They're going to get kind of an extra charge. And so that's one way. They are reducing the size of incoming police academy classes, and that's going to cause some savings. And they're going to take some funds out of reserves. Not a huge amount, probably about – but I say not a huge amount. For any of us, it's a massive amount of money, but city budget standards. City's budget is usually about $170, $180 million. So they'll probably take about, $400K out to kind of make that work. And the city has those rainy day funds, they're pretty commonly called. So that's how they're going to do it. And I think a lot of observers, myself included – really expected some of those three council members to really raise, we could, because it gives the city no leeway to do much of anything else besides some of its very basic functions. Why aren't we rolling back the police expansion? Why aren't we taking a look at this very controversial issue? And I figured there'd at least be some discussion about it. Same thing with the salaries. And there was none.
So, David, I'm going to ask you to editorialize here a little bit.
Lord.
So referring to Shanika, Brian, and Keith, who have previously in different platforms expressed concerns regarding the budget and where funds are being allocated, et cetera, and asking council to kind of take a real hard look at that. What would you attribute to the lack of bringing that up in this most current budget session?
I think it's still a topic very much worth delving into, and certainly our media organization will, just because I think it's good for the public to know. Look, if a council member drops their opposition to, or even just changes their feelings about how it should play out in this particular year to a major issue, any council member, that's something we're going to inquire about. You know, if someone was vociferously opposed to something, they support it, or they're supportive and they opposed it, that's a question political reporters need to delve into. I will say that as someone who's covered the council politics for a long time, it was glaring how that wasn't raised at all. I figured there'd at least be some discussion on it, maybe some back and forth, because the budget vote's not going to happen for a while. Mm-hmm. So if we can be clear, okay, well, going into this budget session, we still have some divisions on council. You know, and we still may. This still may come back up, especially given the role that public pressure has really been playing on moving some of this stuff forward, like we'll see in some of the other stuff happened during the May meeting. You know, ideas that previously City Hall, both the council and some of the city bureaucracy had said, you know, just were not on the table are now being considered or being moved forward very seriously because of public pressure, especially around police brutality, especially around kind of equity is a much more major issue.
Yeah.
I do think it is telling, though, that traditionally councils have given, even some more kind of distant members, have given a lot of deference to city staff, especially in the budget construction. Even though council's supposed to have the final say in the budget, even though, now again, if enough councilors can agree that they are supposed to be able to go, look, we've got a majority on board, we can press this forward. But yeah, right, if there is an opposition to the police expansion and to, you know, the most well-paid of staff getting an even bigger increase, it was not evident in that room on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It was had completely vanished in the course of 2 weeks. And I think that's something that's going to be worth delving into and reporting on and analyzing as the weeks go on.
And I think for me, as you're kind of talking through this, the thing that comes up in terms of, you know, this incident that happened with Johnny Rush, I mean, these aren't isolated interpersonal incidents. So much of what has come up specifically with APD is the culture of it. This very differently, but in a similar vein in terms of here, you have another thing that there's context behind it, but nothing gets brought up. What is the culture happening at City Hall? And I think that's where kind of my brain goes towards in terms of really what's happening behind closed doors and this sense of expectation and even entitlement that comes with a lot of these decision-making processes.
Yeah, and I think there's a piece we published around the beginning of this year called Where We Are Now, and it's a long one. I'll you know, caution the listeners or give them a heads up. And we do those long-form journalism pieces sometimes, but it's an analysis of, you know, why did Asheville keep having progressive councils but had fairly conservative policies in a lot of ways, especially when it came to equity, especially when it came to economic stuff. And, of course, those are deeply interrelated. And this kind of delves into that. And there has historically been, since the, you know, quote-unquote progressives, which tend to be centrist and some kind of center-left type figures, have kind of held a majority on council. And even though it's been shaken up, a lot of this is still very much in place. There's been this habit of working very closely with the city bureaucracy, which tends to be a good deal more conservative. And you can see that pull city policies kind of more to the right politically, you know, and even if council members ran on some pretty left wing or, you know, more kind of radical progressive policies,
there's that tidal wave of kind of the centrist thinking that's happening at City Hall.
Yes, and it should be noted that, you know, currently centrists on council still have a majority, not as much as they used to. And they are getting challenged on things a lot more. They still definitely have a majority. And members like, you know, like Marist or Mannheimer, who definitely, I think, you know, is clearly a centrist and is kind of one of the main leaders of kind of, you know, kind of centrist on council, have pretty much said no in certain terms that, you know, they're going to keep going with, you know, the way they see the business should be done. So I think we are setting up for a lot more public pressure. You know, I think we're going to kind of have a deja vu of what happened last year with the police expansion being so controversial to some degree, because the issue is very controversial again. And it's at this point too, it's, you know, it's basically killing the city's ability to do, you know, what everyone thinks of policy issues and where this money should go. it's killing the city's ability to really do much of anything else besides balance the budget this year, because so much money is going towards staff pay increases and because so much money is going towards the police expansion.
Right.
You know, if this were out of the way, there would be a lot more money for things like transit and for affordable housing. The city was seriously discussing delaying putting more money in the affordable housing trust. That's not an option they ended up going with, but they were seriously considering it during this budget session. And it's interesting because I think that politics is going to come under a lot more criticism than it has in the past. And so I think we're definitely headed for more of a budget fracas this in the next 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, I think the community is at a point where they want to see some results. They want to see some change. They want to see a different level of prioritization and equity.
Yeah. Which is, speaking of segues, that's a good one for the formal meeting itself.
So breezing through the agenda, we had a number of proclamations, including Zogbo Day, Stand Against Racism Day, National Preservation Month, Motorcycle Awareness Month, as well as National Drinking Water Week. And that's a lot of proclamations.
Yes.
Just kind of sitting there for a second. Anything of note there, David?
Yeah, drinking water is really controversial, and some people are against it. I'm kidding. Actually, yes.
I raised an eyebrow.
You had a delegation from Asheville Sister City in Nigeria come over. The deputy governor was here for that. That was really interesting, showing us, I think, that, you know, Asheville is kind of having some of these more international connections as the city gets larger, as its profile gets more prominent. Stand Against Racism was notable because officials from the YWCA said, look, we are supporting the Code for Asheville presentation. It's turned out to be the main issue. So it definitely was kind of a sign that some of these pushes for police reform are really attracting some very broad community support, and even coming up in some venues like Proclamation, where you typically don't see a lot of political commentary going on.
Fascinating. Well, that's a nice segue. Jumping into Code for Asheville, there was a consent agenda where there was a brief discussion regarding the red panda and if it's native to our area.
Turns out that it is.
I learned something.
Yeah, so did I.
From that. Well, going into presentations, there was only one. It was a big one.
Yeah.
So this is Code for Asheville's petition for police accountability through data transparency. And I'm going to give you the floor here, David, because for our listeners who have been paying attention, you will, unless you've been living under a rock, you will know of the Johnny Rush incident. But there's so much more around that. And so maybe if you can start with just talking about what Code for Asheville is and what their hope is specifically around the key words that I'm seeing, accountability and transparency, what that looks like.
Certainly. So, and for listeners who might not be aware of the context around the Rush incident, the Blade has an article just called The Attack on Johnny Rush, which kind of goes primer style and answers a lot of very basic questions about that horrific attack and the context around it. So the Code for Asheville is the Asheville chapter of Code for America, which is an open government and data transparency group. But a lot of the groups take on very different characters and goals depending on the area they're in. Mm-hmm. So Code for Asheville has typically taken on a pretty assertively political character in the sense of, you know, they think city government has not historically been transparent. You know, in a lot of ways, they've worked with city government forums on plenty of things. They've also worked with a lot of local activist groups. They helped the NAACP and the Southern Coalition for Social Justice kind of push forward some analysis of some the traffic stop numbers that showed how bad Asheville's racial disparities were. They helped with some numbers that showed that, you know, homeless individuals face a lot of overwhelming enforcement on very minor charges by the APD. And this is kind of, I think, part of that. And they were kind of the point people on this push. And in just a full disclosure, the Blade has endorsed this push. We do occasionally endorse transparency measures. I think, you know, whether people agree with everything that we publish as an opinion column or not, or some of our views or my views specifically, I think the idea that we should have a much more transparent government, especially over matters that are literally life and death, should almost be non-controversial.
Sounds like a no-brainer to me.
Exactly, yeah. And certainly not as controversial as it has been sometimes in Asheville city government. So we endorse this, and Transmission, which is a trans rights nonprofit where I'm on the board, also endorse this.
Thank you for those disclaimers.
No problem. I think it's important for people to know what's up. But so this petition calls for the APD's, a lot of the APD's policies, their manuals, their use of force, data, their call data, a lot more data than is currently available to just be made public by default. And they Patrick Conant, who's the kind of the point person in this case for Code for Asheville, you know, had a report saying, look, we've talked with the IT department. These things would be take minimal cost, if any cost at all. These are already public record. We can do this in a way that, you know, if there is stuff we legally have to redact, we can do that pretty quickly. But, you know, the public needs this information, needs to be able to draw off it. And this interesting ties back into police expansion as well, because Conant was one of the people analyzing the numbers put forward by Chief Hooper, the crime numbers and the APD staffing numbers, and saying, look, they don't make sense. Like, the numbers she's putting forward are missing a lot of context, and they're kind of dubious. So definitely police data has come up as an issue before, and a lack of transparency has come as an issue before. And this is really kind of an attempt to push forward and say, look, we, the public needs to have an idea of what's being done, ostensibly in their name. And, you know, the police department has a real bad history here of really kind of infringing on rights and not being transparent. So one of the solutions to that is to be more transparent, to expose the stuff to more members of the public so they can really take a look at it, make the decisions for themselves. So groups that, you know, that analyze this or defend marginalized populations, they have a clearer idea of what they're facing and how these structures work, especially when they're being oppressive. So, that's kind of the goal behind it, and you had a range of speakers get behind this. You had Carmen Ramos Kennedy from then, just the local head of the NAACP, really push for this, and also the scene needs to take up some traffic stop reforms that they fairly modest ones, you know, just to require like written consent for searches,
deprioritizing regulatory stops.
Big issue last year, but despite their, you know, city officials saying they'd move on, they never did. The police department basically kind of quashed it. And so, but now there's a renewed push, and it looks like there'll probably be a vote on it sometime in the next few months.
How did that get lost with that previous push? Because there was a pretty notable headline in terms of a crisis regarding some of these racial disparities, and there seemed to be a sense of urgency. And would you chalk
it
up
to those literal words were used by the mayor, a sense of urgency.
So would you chalk up this kind of getting dropped to red tape and bureaucracy?
Not so much red tape as the power of the bureaucracy, specifically the deference council gave to Police Chief Tammy Hooper, who was very against any of these measures. And they pretty much stopped, and they just kind of quietly dropped. And also kind of to a fairly complacent political culture in Asheville, there's not a big habit, even if council members who might be, you know, kind of dissent on topic, of really repeatedly bringing something up when the other councilors don't press forward with it. But, you know, that was a council that was even more centrist than the current one, with even you know, that was whiter, bluntly, than the current one. Most of their members are fairly white, fairly well off. If there's a sense of urgency, they didn't really show it. Mm-hmm. And so this got delayed for a year, and now we have the worst traffic stop numbers in the entire state, where we had previously we had pretty bad numbers. Yeah. But
Up for me is because I know shortly after the Johnny Rush incident, there was a session that kind of built out of a work session or a budget session in where they were looking at these specific reforms and how to move forward on
that. And those were not some of the ones that came up. They were very notable for being – but now it looks like they are kind of starting to move the process.
Yeah.
Partly because of pressure like this. You know, Ramos Kennedy was very blunt in saying, look – like, you know, we keep hearing something's going to happen. It doesn't. You know, the council was not moving forward. Even some kind of more centrist members of council, like Mayor Mannheimer, are saying, look, we want more data. It's not come to fruition. What's going on? So it does seem like there is kind of some broad support that's on council. It was interesting, though, that you saw Dee Williams, who was a chair with NAACP and still works with them on some of these police data issues, and has really played a major role in kind of bringing it forward as a council candidate last year, say that she feels, you know, the city is still, you know, has dealt less with a lot of the black activists who kind of originally brought this up and has dealt more with kind of some of the white activists instead, and that needs to stop. You know, they need to really deal with people on the ground. So that was kind of an interesting, important point on things. And you had a number of speakers say, look, you know, the APD has got a bad record on this. We need – transfer needs to move forward. We need a lot more, too. And that was the transmission statement, which was read by Brent Estelle, who's the director of operations there, very much emphasized that, too. Said, look, this is good, but this is just a first step. You know, we really need a lot more. And this is only a way to build off of that on to hopefully start to deal with some of the segregation we see in Asheville.
It was interesting as I was kind of going through some of those data sets in terms of how far it went. Yes. And this is me, just my personal opinion. Like, it feels like almost too safe in terms of like transparency and accountability seem like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with what we've seen around police reform, you know, as you just mentioned, just kind of like, you know, expanding upon that thought, is that maybe this is just like a jump off point in terms of like, this is the precedent in terms of data, in terms of what is quickly and readily available to the public. And then maybe we can expand on this based upon what is the need of the community.
Yeah, and that's certainly what a lot of people express as kind of the hope. You know, there was a wide range of groups that kind of signed on, and especially some of the groups that, you know, that are a little more left-leaning or are directly organized by people from marginalized populations in Asheville. That tended to be more of the tenor of those statements was, look, you know, this is good, but this is a starting point.
Yeah.
And the point was raised more than once, you know, look, this is kind of the elephant in the room, but, like, one of the reasons this is happening was because transparency has been so bad under the current police chief. You know, not just the, like, formal data releases, but, like, not showing up at meetings, not showing up for process type stuff. So there's definitely kind of that frustration in the room too. And I thought that was kind of telling and interesting. And I think, you know, to some degree, yeah, it does sound like a no-brainer, but, you know, some of the recommendations, like make the APD's policy manual publicly available, why the hell wasn't it available already? Like, you know, the fact that it has to go so far to these instances is mainly because very little has been done on this front.
Sure. And I think the argument could be made specifically in terms of some of the themes that you and I have spoken about ad nauseum last year was transparency with the city in terms of, you know, we're not just talking about the police department here, but just across the board in terms of various things happening, the community not being made aware of it, and then just it being a huge issue around that. So it seems like a good first step, but I think with transparency, it's not just like we're doing it. It has to be a continued process.
Well, exactly. And I think why this might you know, be a good first step is because it makes this data available for the public and other groups of people to really kind of delve and make their own conclusions, do further reporting on stuff, and kind of press when they see something that's going on. And frankly, it also makes it harder for these numbers to be kind of misused, which they have been by city officials in the past, who claim something that is kind of dubious. That definitely happened last year, but that's far from the first time. So hopefully that will be the effect, and will kind of help build towards some of these further reforms. And I definitely think it's interesting that the NAACP reforms are finally really seem to be moving forward.
I was just going to ask you about the accountability piece outside of the transparency.
Yes.
So that came back up.
So not at this meeting, but it's likely going to come back before council, probably in the next 2-3 months. But you know, I think that's kind of where some of the rubber is going to meet the road. Chief Hooper's historically very much opposed those reforms, but now it's clear the public is really, really behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of groups that were just kind of, you know, pushing for them before are really saying, look, what's the holdup? You need to do these. This is ridiculous. So I think you're going to see a lot more pressure on council and maybe some more conflict over that going forward.
Fascinating.
Well, David, that is it for me in terms of questions. Is there anything that we missed during this most recent city council meeting that you want to touch on?
I think for now, that's probably more than enough.
That's more than enough, and there's so many contextual pieces that we just briefly touched the surface on. And so for listeners out there tuning into our city council report, where can they learn more about some of these issues that you write about?
AshevilleBlade.com.
David, thank you as always for joining us.
Always a pleasure.